I don't know what the River Master would say about this generalization. Like all generalizations, it can't be any more accurate than a generalization can be. But the third column strikes me as emphasizing the wisdom of the eternal. And the fourth column strikes me as emphasizing the love of the eternal. And there reminds me of Rimmaster's not infrequent reference to the lecture she went to in London back in the, must have been 57 to 59, somewhere in there, when D.T. Suzuki was visiting, and he gave this great talk he did on Maha Karuna, great compassion, and Maha Prajna, great wisdom. At any rate, the fountain is a metaphor for the flooding, the pouring, the bathing in the water of the Spirit. That love that flows over and through and around and under the need, and that as it does so, it helps correct that mistaken point of view that I was talking about yesterday when I talked about the third column. So I want to talk a little bit more about what that mistaken point of view is, because it seems to me that it's always a mistaken point of view about the nature of love. When we judge ourselves as being unworthy of love. When people are victims, they often draw the conclusion that something has judged them as unworthy, and this is why something has happened to them. That they're somehow outside of love. When someone does something that is wrong or that they believe to be wrong, they very easily draw the conclusion that they have made themselves unworthy of love and that they're separate from it. And those jangles or knots of pain and confusion are fundamentally knots of pain and confusion about love. And I'm thinking here of primarily of love with a capital L, but it also includes love with a small L, love with the love of man, which is really just one aspect of love of the eternal. So how does that get set right? How does that mistaken point of view get corrected? I talked yesterday about the kind of illuminating insight that is given when all conditions ripen. And then there's also this aspect of simply being bathed in love, of coming to find that through our actual experience of love, that love simply isn't something that is shut on and off. It's not something that judges. It's not something that's withdrawn. It is. And we go through our meanderings in relationship to it, and actually within it. And it is. this fountain is never turned off. It's never turned off. There's no off valve to it. It's always on. In our own minds, however, in our own thoughts, in our own presuppositions about the world, we can be convinced that we are separate from it, or that it does not exist. For years, I've been puzzled by the fact that the seeming disjointedness between this fourth column and what I was given in fall of 98 in this aspect of training, meditation, the spiritual life, which was listen carefully. And it's really just now that I'm in doing these talks, it's kind of like the pennies dropping. Well, of course, what is listening? What is spiritual listening? What is spiritual listening? It's attuning oneself to the eternal. It's bringing oneself into attunement with the eternal. It's letting go of the presuppositions. It's letting go of the downward looking. It's turning within into one's own heart, which is of the eternal. And in that place where we attune with to the eternal, we know that the love cannot be cut off, that it cannot be turned into duality, the duality of love and hate, for example. The love of the eternal can't be turned into that. So it really is true that man stands in his own shadow, and only he can turn towards the light. When he does so, well, there it is. This matter of listening carefully, the word carefully is a good word because it takes care. It takes a certain amount of constant, round-the-clock, quiet effort. It's a choosing an inner centeredness over an outward distractedness. It's a choosing an upward looking rather than a downward looking attitude. You might say that the third and fourth columns reveal the implications of what is sensed in the first column, of that intuition we have that is rooted in our own Buddha nature, that light is inextinguishable, that shines through those dark clouds. And the third and fourth columns reveal its magnificence and its tenderness and its kindness and how much it cares about us and about all things. We train ourselves so as to become more and more in harmony with it. And at the same time, there's that within us which knows that we can never be separate from it. It is only our own karmically conditioned attitudes, externalized points of view, externalized longings that get us confused. When Reverend Master speaks of this in Lotus Blossom, one of the ways she speaks of it is as bathing of the love of the eternal, bathing in the love of the eternal as healing. And it is as if these karmic jangles are kind of gaping wounds that need to be healed. So there is that aspect. And don't be mistaken in thinking that this is some form of medicine, which some people have at times done. It's not medicine. I mean, it's not medical practice of some kind, put it that way. It's a spiritual medicine. I'll read a little bit what she says about this fountain, which is, as so many things in here, just so exquisitely beautiful. It is the bathing of all in the fountain of the Lord's love, speaking of this fourth column. The house over the fountain becomes a house over the newborn Buddha, and the water of the fountain, the sweet tea that is poured over his statue at Hanamatsuri. The Buddha's birth, festival of the Buddha's birth. There is nothing clean or unclean in the mind of the Lord. All are Buddha, as are, I'm going to generalize a little bit. All are Buddha, and I must see this at all times. The Lord bathes all in the fountain of his love, and I must do the same, for I have nothing that is not of the Lord. Do not say that which is not true. The wheel of the Dharma rolls constantly. It lacks for nothing and needs something. The sweet dew covers the whole world, and within it lies the truth. This fourth precept should be kept absolutely. I must not even wonder about the Buddhahood of others, for this is a form of lying. Look at how she takes the precept, how deep she takes that precept. To even wonder about the Buddhahood of others is a form of lying to oneself. This is always a sign of a genuine understanding, that when the precepts become so profound, the comprehension of the precepts becomes so profound. In the explanation, I think, of the phrase, it lacks for nothing yet needs something, she says, the wheel of the law needs expression in daily life. In other words, this fountain is always flowing. We can't really add or detract from it. And we have this privilege, really. I could say responsibility, but I think it's more a privilege, really, that we can express it in our daily lives. Through our training, we can allow it to express itself through us, which is the better way of putting it. She says, this fourth column holds a spring of compassion, as well as the water of love and the seeds of the lotus. Sometimes that which comes forth is compassion, sometimes love, sometimes understanding. Always it is the water for the healing of the spirit, always the teaching of the Dharma, that which fertilizes the harmony of body and mind. Every act that does not come forth from the egocentric eye causes the water in the fountain to course more freely down the mountainside and flow into the waveless sea, where it feeds the lotus blossoms, giving those whose roots are under attack from Mara the strength, courage, and faith to withstand his onslaughts. At any one time in a temple that has more than a few people, there's always about one person who's either under attack from Mara or about to be or just recovering from. And it seems to work that way. Usually not more than one. Sometimes as many as two or three at a time. At that time, when we are being stretched spiritually, which is what Mara's job is, stretch us spiritually and help us exercise our faith. At that time, we really need to hold fast within that first column. We really need to take responsibility for ourselves and offer ourselves and all we are to the Eternal within that second column. And we really need to trust that the understanding and the help will come in its good time when we're ready, and that we'll be able to comprehend it in the third column. And we really have to remember that in the end, all is bathed in the fountain of the Lord's love in the fourth column. In other words, we need to meditate. We need to train ourselves in the precepts. The precepts aren't just a bunch of externalized rules. We only activate the precepts when we take them into our heart and long to be one with that which they are describing. A life lived in harmony with the Eternal. A life that expresses the Eternal. When that water of love is flowing within us and we know it, it is ecstasy. And it is of the utmost importance that we understand that every experience that we have has a beginning, a duration, and a end, and an end. That we'll always have to go back into the unknown. We'll always have to go back to that position where we're looking up into the unknown within that first column. If we try to cling to any particular state of feeling, we only drive away that which we seek. When all conditions ripen, the treasure house unfolds. It is a big mistake to passively sit around waiting for that to happen. You can wait a long time. The way that it happens is that we get on with doing what needs to be done. We train ourselves, regardless of how we feel. When we feel lousy, we feel lousy and we train ourselves. When we feel happy and we train ourselves. It's the training of ourselves that matters, not the temporary state of feeling. Feelings come and go, they're all over the place. Don't try to stay in heaven when heaven happens. It's not a sin to appreciate it. Appreciate it. It's wonderful when it happens. and it never stays around. For that matter, neither does hell. It doesn't last forever. Sometimes it feels like it's going to, but it doesn't. It doesn't last forever. All states of feeling are transitory. Similarly, all insights are transitory. Don't try to cling to any particular state of understanding. The default position to which we always return is the knowing nothing. A person who can be content in that position is a very fortunate person indeed, and we can all train ourselves to be content in that position. You don't have to know anything. Whatever insight has come that has been helpful, it was helpful at that time. And that's good. Let it go now. Get on with it. Do that which needs to be done. And trust that what will be needed in any situation will be there. The further we go in training, the further we go in humility. I am not God. I need the help of the Eternal. I am not the Eternal. I'm someone who needs the help of the Eternal. I can turn towards the Eternal for help at any time. I can offer all that I am and all that I have at any time. Nothing can stop me if I wish to do that. I can sit still in patience at any time. I can listen with my heart at any time. How I feel, how I appear, external circumstances, those things are not real. What I understand or don't understand, those things are not real. They don't matter. Don't make external things, external relationships, transitory states, the focus of your life. Because we're a sitting duck when that happens. We take refuge in transitory things. When transitory things dissolve into nothingness, which they all do, we're left high and dry. The true refuge is the Eternal.